Acker had booked a car so they could make a quick getaway the moment Lion King lost. Eisner didn't come, partly to avoid questions about Ovitz, partly because he didn't expect it to win. Ragtime swept the awards for Best Book, Actress, and Score, but then, at the end, Schneider and Schumacher were stunned when Lion King won as Best Musical. They raced to the stage, but the show was running late, and all they could say was a few thank yous before the broadcast ended. They ran off the stage and couldn't stop laughing. Backstage, surrounded by reporters, Schneider said, "We're thrilled and shocked." In some ways, the Broadway production of The Lion King marked the pinnacle of the Eisner years at Disney. It was both a critical and commercial success, both wildly original and entertaining. It was so exhilarating, so successful, that Schneider wondered what could come next. It was in the nature of the creative process that you couldn't simply repeat yourself and succeed, at least not for long. Even as The Lion King played to sold-out crowds, Eisner pressed Schneider about the next show, Aida, which was having problems in development. He worried about feature animation. If Schneider had a criticism of the Disney culture, of both Katzenberg and Eisner, it was that they never knew how to celebrate or enjoy success in a true, meaningful way. It was never enough. There was always tomorrow to worry about. In the wake of Pulp Fiction, the Weinstein brothers were favorite sons at Disney, and Eisner frequently prodded them to expand their reach. As Miramax racked up profits and the Disney studios floundered, Harvey Weinstein was sometimes embarrassed when Eisner taunted Joe Roth in his presence, asking why Roth couldn't run the Disney studios as successfully as the Weinsteins ran Miramax. After Katzenberg left, the Weinsteins had to report to Roth. He took charge after Bill Mechanic left, and it hardly helped their relationship. Still, the Weinsteins were generally allowed to do whatever they wanted, including Bob Weinstein's dimension films aimed at younger audiences. Eisner had often encouraged Harvey Weinstein to create a Miramax cable channel, a venue for Miramax's growing film library, and for original programming that would compete with the increasingly successful home box office. In the summer of 1997, Weinstein brought Disney a deal in which Miramax would acquire a half interest with Cablevision in two existing channels, Bravo and the independent film channel, IFC, and would create a third Miramax channel. The cost of the deal for Disney was $312.5 million. But Peter Murphy, head of strategic planning, balked. "This is pure gold," Weinstein protested. "We're not ready," Murphy replied. Pressed by Weinstein, he acknowledged that he liked the deal, but the powers that be, meaning Eisner, had said no. Weinstein pressed the case with Eisner, but made no headway. "We're not moving in that direction," Eisner said, meaning cable. Weinstein reluctantly abandoned the idea. The channels were later sold to NBC for $1.4 billion. Whatever the merits of the deal, Disney was still struggling with the Cap Cities acquisition. The ABC network's first full year under Disney ownership was little short of a disaster. Tarsus had arrived to begin her new job in June. Eisner had a meeting with Harbert to persuade him to stay, but he couldn't really explain what his duties as chairman were, so Harbert exercised his option to leave.